very much, Dan. I'd like to say how good it is to see such a good crowd of people here tonight, because we were told only a few months ago that this war was over, that it was going to bring peace and democracy to the people of Iraq, that we would all be eating our words. In fact, Alistair Campbell told us, 6 months ago, that we should apologise for having opposed the war. Now, I think in view, perhaps, of subsequent events, that perhaps Alistair Campbell should apologise to the rest of us for the many lies that he and the government told before the war, during the war, and after the war, in order to justify what has been going on over the last few months. And it's said that Tony Blair now wants to draw a line under the war and concentrate on domestic issues. I mean, the people here might have something to say. The idea that somehow he's popular on domestic issues, when you think of tuition fees, which I know a number of people here will be demonstrating over next weekend, the whole question of top-up fees, or indeed his claim today that he's cracking down on antisocial behaviour. He wants less broken windows, cars that are burnt out, and people begging on the streets, which might make you wonder why he goes to war so often if he's so concerned about the terrible effects of urban dereliction and everything else. Because, of course, if you look at what has happened in Iraq, we have a situation now where people are living in fear very often of going out on the streets. People who are still not receiving, amazingly, more than 6 months after the war has ended, are still not receiving electricity, water, and other basic amenities, where people are frightened to go to work or aren't able to work, and very often they're not going to school or to college in the way that you're able to do, and where there is a huge resistance to the American and British troops who are now illegally occupying that country. And if you think about the lies that we've been told about this war, you may recall a couple of events. You may recall in April, just 6 months ago, in April of this year, there was a demonstration in Baghdad of, 200 or 300 people, which brought down the statue of Saddam Hussein. And we were told that this was the authentic voice of the Iraqi people. I don't know about your demonstrations in Cambridge, but I don't suppose any of them get the publicity that was granted to this demonstration of 200 or 300 people, where it was beamed all around the world, it was every headline, every front page of every newspaper in the world, and we were told this was what most Iraqis wanted. That was a great big lie, because since then there have been literally hundreds of demonstrations in Iraq, where the Iraqis very kindly, because most people in Britain and America don't speak Arabic, very kindly write their slogans in English as well on their banners, and their slogans very clearly say, US go home, we don't want you here, we want you to leave our country. Because the Iraqis believe, and I think that they have absolute right on their side, they believe that they are an intelligent people, they believe that they have suffered enough from years of dictatorship and war, and after all they have now had decades of war, of sanctions, of bombing, and all these sorts of things. They now believe that it is their right to be able to govern themselves. And when you think that we have gone through dozens and dozens of regime changes around the world, where there has never been an American or a British occupation, if you think, for example, in southern Europe, there were fascist dictatorships in Spain and Portugal until the mid-1970s. There was also a right-wing dictatorship in Greece until the mid-1970s. These people managed to overthrow their own dictatorships without being bombed and without being invaded by a foreign power. And surely, if this is what we grant to the Spanish and the Portuguese and the Greeks, surely it's the very least that we should do for the Iraqis. And anything else is to say that really somehow the Iraqis aren't able to run their own country. And that, it seems to me, takes us back to the old ideas of the British Empire and now the American Empire, because they say, of course, you know, America's not interested in empires, except it now runs Bosnia, Kosovo, Afghanistan and Iraq. It has its eyes on Syria and Iran, not to mention North Korea, Cuba and any other state around the world which, for whatever reason, creates any sort of displeasure among the people who support the Project for a New American Century, who are based, the hawks who are based in Washington. And those countries are now under threat in a very, very real way. You know, when Israel feels confident enough to go and bomb Syria, and to go and bomb on the basis that supposedly it is harbouring terrorists, and also, if you read the intelligence, well, I suppose perhaps you shouldn't take too much notice of some of the intelligence that comes out when you think that apparently in Britain, even John Scarlett, the head of British intelligence, apparently, according to Ian Duncan Smith, even lied to Ian Duncan Smith. Now, I know this might be tempting, but it's a rather odd thing to do in a country where you have an opposition party and you're going to war, for the intelligence services to lie even to the leader of the opposition. This is the level of lies that we've been led to believe. And if you look at what is now happening in Syria, where they say there is intelligence that they are now building weapons of mass destruction, that there is intelligence that they are harbouring terrorists, you think to yourself, haven't we heard all this somewhere before? Weren't we told last September, in the dossier that was supposed to be the reason for going to war, weren't we told then that there were weapons of mass destruction which could be fired in 45 minutes? There was a nuclear threat. If you saw the London Evening Standard, the day that dossier was published, it said Saddam can hit us in 45 minutes. And Jeff Hoon was asked, you know, at the Hutton Inquiry, he was asked, did you want the headlines of the newspapers to say this? And he said, oh, no, I didn't want them to say this. Why didn't you complain when they misled millions of people in the country, and it wasn't just the Evening Standard, several newspapers did it, why didn't you complain that they were misleading people and there was no threat of 45 minutes from Saddam Hussein or indeed anybody else? Jeff Hoon, who's after all a highly educated barrister and a man who paid tens of thousands of pounds out of our money to be the Minister of Defence, his answer to that was, I don't know. Now, I would suggest that actually he does know. He knew very well that the dossier was meant to create exactly those headlines. It was meant to create a situation where people believed that they had uranium from Niger, that they had these weapons, and we were told, if you remember those marvellous maps of Saddam Hussein's palaces, where we were told they had a map of Buckingham Palace inside one of these Saddam Hussein palaces, just to show how small and modest our own Queen's palaces are. You know, that there's these huge things, and they are full of these weapons of mass destruction, and they're all over the country. Iraq is now being ruled by a colonial administration of British and Americans from these very palaces. This is what in a gratuitous insult to the Iraqi people, they've occupied these palaces, and they now run them as a colonial administration. Now, wouldn't you think they could find these weapons if they were actually in the same building? However big the building is, however spacious the grounds are, however all these things are, you might think that they could find them. But of course, they can't find them because they're not there. Even the Iraq Survey Group, the CIA-backed group that was sent by the Americans after the war to look for the weapons of mass destruction, has come back and said, sorry, we can't find anything. Oh, we did find one file of what in somebody's fridge, which had been there for years. I don't know what the state of your fridge is like, but maybe, you know, people keep these things in their fridges for some time. One file of Botox. That was what they had. This is what they found as a weapon of mass destruction. It would be laughable if we hadn't gone to war on this pretext, if we hadn't gone to war in order, supposedly, to get rid of these weapons, that thousands of people have died as a result, and the terrible consequences of that war. And not just the consequences for the Iraqi people, but the consequences for the American and British people as well. Because when George Bush said on May the 1st, mission accomplished, when he flew onto the aircraft carrier and made his speech saying he'd made the world safe for freedom and democracy and the war is over, more American soldiers have died since May the 1st than died during the war itself. And that death rate is continuing and is accelerating. And if you look at the bomb which took place on Sunday at the hotel which houses the Iraqi Governing Council, the CIA, the Israeli Secret Services, Mossad, if they are able to have a bomb at this hotel, then nobody running that country is safe from the resistance that is going on. And this is really a disastrous situation, for which the American and British governments have absolutely no answer. And, you know, when you look at what they are really saying, they are saying we have to continue, we'll have to, if necessary, send more troops in there. This is exactly the pattern that happened in Vietnam. Vietnam, the war was resisted by the Vietnamese people. It was increasingly unpopular with the American soldiers. They threw in more and more troops year after year after year, and they still lost the war at terrible cost to the Vietnamese people and to the American people as well. Now, this should not be allowed to happen again, and that is why we had the demonstration 2 weeks ago about ending the occupation and about bringing this government to full account for the lies that it has told. Because now we find the man who wants to draw a line under the wall, Tony Blair, the man who got the 7-minute standing ovation at the Labour Party conference, I must say I can't think of a gathering of anywhere else, of 2,000 people anywhere else in Britain, which would have been as gullible and foolish as to give him that standing ovation, because I really think it was an absolute disgrace to the Labour Party. I think it was an absolute disgrace for everybody there when he also made a vicious attack on asylum seekers in this speech, that they stand up and applaud him regardless of what he does. And this is a man who in the speech said, I would do it all again. Now, what is the state of his mental health to say, I would do it all again, when everybody knows what a disaster this war has been? When even in the United States now, there is a growing movement against the war. And I think George Bush is now in serious trouble in the United States. So what has Tony Blair done? He's invited George Bush to a state visit at our expense in London. Now, I understand today, because some of our people went to see the police to talk about the route for the demonstration, they're now saying it's not a state visit. Apparently, I think this is already a little bit of a victory myself, but they're saying it's not a state visit because apparently, if you have a state visit, you have to travel in an open carriage along Whitehall and the Mall. This apparently is a definition. I had no idea. Maybe there's experts here on British Constitution and so on. I had no idea this was a definition of it. And this is too much of a security risk for George Bush to do it. So it's been downgraded from a state visit. I suspect we'll find now that he won't be staying in Buckingham Palace, but somewhere slightly more uncontroversial for the Queen. So these are very good signs, but we are having this 3-day visit where this man is going to probably address the Houses of Parliament, where he is going to be wined and dined by the Queen and by Blair, and where he'll be feted as a great statesman, rather than the war criminal that he actually is. And it seems to me that this is really adding insult to injury. We were taken into war against the wishes of the vast majority of people in this country, and it seems to me that now they're trying to rub this in our faces. And I think we have to make it absolutely clear to Tony Blair and to George Bush, and I think this is already, from the stories I hear already up and down the country, this is already happening, that although this is on a weekday, we will have 3 days of demonstrations, both in towns like Cambridge and a demonstration in London on the Thursday, and all sorts of different activities and cultural events and protests. We'll have a welcome protest for wherever he arrives. We'll have a going-off protest for when he leaves. We'll have a Goodbye George concert for him on the Friday night. We're going to do all these kind of things. And by the way, we're also building a statue of George Bush that we can put on the plinth in Trafalgar Square. And if any of you want to help to pull it down, you're very, very welcome to do so. Because I think we have to make absolutely clear to our government, and more importantly to everybody around the world, that the people who opposed the war still oppose what they're doing in our name and oppose having this warmonger anywhere near us. And that is why it's so important to demonstrate on the 19th, 20th and the 21st of November. And I'm sure there's all sorts of things we can do in the meantime to build up to this, that we want to have a day where people drop banners from wherever they can, from bridges, from motorway bridges, from railways, from colleges, from any building that you feel is appropriate to drop a banner from, that we can have, perhaps on November the 5th, we can have the, rather than have the traditional guy being burnt, perhaps we could have Blair and Bush, if we can fit them both on the bonfire, or maybe we'll make 2 bonfires in order to do it. We can begin to build up a head of steam, and we're also saying we don't want him to come on the visit. We've got a petition which we'd like people to take away and sign, but we are saying if he is going to come, then we are going to make sure that everybody knows that we're against it. And that is really the importance of continuing this movement, you know. And I think, I just want to conclude by saying, I think this movement has been a really remarkable movement. And Natalie talked about what had happened in Cambridge, and Cambridge has been one of the most active areas for anti-war activity over the last, well, 2 years it is now, that we've had to campaign against this war on terror. And I'm sure that Cambridge is going to respond in the way that it normally does over this latest the latest visit. But I think it shows us another thing, not just about the fact that we can come together and do all these sorts of things, but the importance of protest. You know, they always say to us that we can't affect things, that the only people who can affect things are the MPs in Parliament, and George will no doubt tell you about the reality about that. The people at the top of society, of which, of course, Cambridge University has its stuff full of quite a few of these people, these are the important people who really make the decisions in the world. Now, that isn't true, and protest movements really show that it isn't true. You look at what we achieved. We didn't stop the war, but I think we have stopped another war. I don't see how Tony Blair can get up and say, I have intelligence, which I can't reveal to you, about the threat of Iran, Syria, North Korea. It makes it much, much harder for him to do. I think we wouldn't have had Campbell's resignation, the Hutton inquiry, any of these things without the anti-war movement. And we wouldn't have created the biggest political crisis of Tony Blair's career without the anti-war movement. And therefore, it's very, very important we do continue, that these people we're up against are not just simply involved in one war. They will go for war after war after war unless we stop them. And therefore, we have to stop them. This is the whole idea of the Project for a New American Century. But we are in a great tradition of doing this. You know, there are hundreds of years of people protesting. And people always said to them, what's the point? You won't make any difference. 100 years ago, women couldn't possibly have the vote because, you know, they weren't intelligent enough to be able to vote. And they certainly weren't allowed into Cambridge University just over 100 years ago. You look at the black people in the United States of America, it took 2 decades to win even the very limited civil rights that they won. I don't believe that our campaign is going to take as long as this, but it is a campaign where we are in a great tradition of protest, of democratic movements from below, which really can change the world. And that is the importance of continuing to mobilise, of coming, of having your own demonstrations and protests in Cambridge over that period, and coming to London on the 20th to join us, and making sure that this movement remains the huge, diverse and democratic movement that it has always been. Thank you.